Nakia.
Well, hello, everybody.
Welcome back to
Super Chat with Kat and Nakia.
How's your day going so far?
My day is good. It's such a beautiful day outside. I went for a walk with my dog this morning. We are so lucky to live in California where it's just sunshine and beautifulness all the time.
I agree. I absolutely agree. Got a little bit of work done this morning. I am a self-proclaimed workaholic, so I need to work on that. But I agree. But this guest we have today
is a special
one. Oh my gosh. Where do we start? He has such
a career.
Just an honorable career, something that I could only wish to have.
Yes, he's a brilliant actor. And funnily enough, my kids and my husband and I watched one of his movies recently, Road Warrior. And I was just dying because I'm looking at that mohawk. I was like, he really created a look there. Like that created a whole generation of cosplay. So without further ado, we welcome our wonderful, amazing friend, Vernon Wells. Yay! Hey, Vernon.
Well, thank you. After that amazing introduction, I think I should just leave because it's not really like I live up to that.
Well, we are so honored to be in such a great presence of you. I mean, obviously you're not physically here, but I have looked over your career and I have enjoyed all of your work. You know, you are not only just a comedic actor, you are dramatic. I mean, it's just, it's unfathomable how far your talent extends. And I am just so honored to know you. And you were just so humble, Vernon. Yes. I mean, with a career like that, you would think that your head might be stuck up your butt, but it's not at all.
I credit that to my mother and my grandfather, because I grew up with my grandfather. My mother was a single mom. She lived in Melbourne and I lived in the country on the farm with my grandfather. And I you know, his whole attitude was, you know, he used to say to me, always remember on the way up, the people that you ignore are the ones that kick your ass on the way down.
Ooh, that's good advice.
That's very good.
And I always remembered that. And his other thing was, it takes as many muscles to frown as it does to smile. So, you know, you just keep that in mind. And I don't think, you know, I teach acting and I always say to people when they come, because they come with this whole big thing of, oh my God, you've done all these things. And I always say to them, if you've come for me to teach you how to act, I'll give you your money back, because I can't. You know, I can't teach anybody how to act. All I can do is give you the tools to do the job, you know, so that you know the boundaries of what you can and can't do. And people don't realize that we're all actors. You know, when you're born, how do you get something from your mother when you're, you know, 2 years old or a year old? You put on a tantrum, you know, and it's the greatest acting job in the world. And we do that. But unfortunately, we tend to get that knocked out of us as we grow up, so to speak, you know, by peer pressure, by our parents wanting you to grow up and be, you know, do the right thing. And so we drift off into other things. But some of us, like you two and me and the rest of the, nice people on Power Rangers, all the rest of us, we keep it. And we continue to use it, and it's part of our lives and part of our persona. And I don't feel any more special than either of you or anywhere else. What I think is that I've been incredibly lucky. I mean, I've just been lucky. You know, people like what I do. I love what I do. But there was a time, take my word for it, there was a time when you would have been sitting there saying, Vernon is this wonderful person. You would have been sitting there saying, we have him on, but we really don't want to talk to him. I was
more about that.
Good. I got it's that syndrome, too much, too big, too soon. And handling it, little boy from the country, I had no clue. And I didn't have anybody around me here to advise me. In Australia, I was perfect because I had a support network, you know, to fall back on, my parents, my friends, you know, my manager, people like that. When I came to America, I had nobody. And so everything, you know, as they say, all the traps that are laid, I walked into every one of them. And that I was.
When you came to America, Vernon?
Sorry, love?
How old were you when you came to America?
We seriously have to get into age.
Well, okay. What brought you to America?
When I came to America, I think I was like 42 or something in that range when I came to the States. I never came to America. I was brought to America after I did Road Warrior. Joel Silver, the producer, saw it and he wanted me to do Weird Science.
Yes. Oh, my
and
I loved that movie.
So he haggled and carried on and got me to come over. Well, while I was here in the States, of course, to me, I was here, I did it, and I'm going home. You know, I'm a total Australian. I'll be on the next plane out. Thank you very much. And he took me around to people and showed me, and his next movie what he was doing was Commando.
Wow.
And he wanted me to do Commando, but the director didn't, surprisingly enough. Or not surprisingly enough. And so what virtually happened was I went home and I did a film in Australia with Brian Brown's lovely wife and Rachel and a lot of kids, played Daffy Duck. Don't even ask, just accept it. While I was doing that, they rang and said, we need you to come back because things didn't work out and we want you to do the role. And that brought me back after a lot of negotiations to do Commando. And then Inner Space came up with Steven. And, you know, it just sort of, it became one of those things where I had no reason to go back to Australia. Yeah. And I could give myself all these reasons for not being here, but none of them made sense. So I stayed.
Was it hard for you? Because I know being a fellow Aussie, there was a lot of cultural differences that I wasn't really sure when I first moved here. Like Nakia loves the story of I went to the grocery store to get rock melon. You know what rock melon is,
yes.
Right? And they looked at me like I was an alien. And I said, it's, and I'm describing, it's like a orange in the middle. It's a fruit and it's got a rough skin. And they said, cantaloupe.
Yep. Oh, right? No, I had a similar one was I was, when I first came over, I didn't have a lot of money. And I had this beautiful old Lincoln. You know, one of the big, that they called them the boats. It was this huge, big cover. I loved it. But, of course, things would break on it all the time. Like, you know, the gear shift would break and I'd have to get underneath it, reattach it, do it. And I'm under the car one day doing it and I can't see what I'm doing. So I start yelling for a torch. Come on, bring me a torch, goddammit.
Oh, a flashlight.
And I'm under there in amongst all this grease and suddenly this flame comes under the car to me and I just freaked out totally. It's like, and they went, you asked for a torch? And I went, you know, the one you switch on and off with batteries. And they went, yeah, you mean a flashlight.
Like, that is hilarious. Yeah.
I went through that whole thing that you went through with people and ordering food in restaurants. Oh. Yeah.
So hard.
Like, I remember the first breakfast I ordered when I came over and when I was working and in the restaurant at the hotel. And I said, could I just get some eggs and grilled tomato on toast, please? And she said, of course, sir. How would you like your eggs? And I went, on the toast. and she went, no, sir. I mean, how would you like them? Over easy, over medium. And I just sat there going,
you get what you get in Australia, right?
You
don't have a choice.
No.
Funny story, Vernon. I took my husband with me when we were dating to Australia for the first time. And you know, Australia, we were not the best. I think the Olympics helped us get a little bit more into customer service, but it wasn't Australians' thing. Like, they don't, they're not, you get what you get. Like, don't. So my husband, we're at this restaurant and there's like a tiny fruit fly on his salad. And he says, there's a fly on it. And I go, and I just pick the lettuce out. And he was looking at me like, what the heck? And then we took him to breakfast and there's the restaurant had a cat sitting on the counter, which is quite normal for people to have their animals in restaurants. Like,
really?
Yeah. And he said he had to look at this cat's butt for the whole time he was eating. He said, I couldn't believe it. Then he asked for a iced coffee. And you know how our iced coffees are in Australia. They're more like a milkshake with whipped cream and everything. He was like, what is going on? I'm in an alternate universe.
Oh, yeah. I it's funny that you're talking about that. Grace, when the first time Gracie came to Australia, she we went out and we had breakfast and she got bacon. And she's a vegetarian now. She has been for the last 30 odd years. But at that stage, she ate meat. And she said, I'll have bacon, please, with, you know, tomato and so on and so on. And they brought back the, and you know how the bacon's cooked in Australia? It's not all not crispy. Burnt.
It's more like ham.
Right.
Yes. Oh, okay.
Like Canadian bacon.
Yeah, Canadian bacon. And so the guy brings it and he puts it down in front of her. She sits there and she looks at it. And I said, what's wrong? And she went, they didn't cook my bacon. And I called the guy, I said, excuse me, my wife's bacon's not cooked. And he said, yes, it is, sir. And she said, no, I mean, I need it crisp. And he said, oh, sorry, ma'am. And he takes it back and he brings it. And it's a little crinkled on the edges. You know, like. And she went, no, I want it crisp. And he went, yes, ma'am. And he went. And when he came back, there was a charred little mass in the middle of it. And she sat there and she went, thank you. And he just looked at her like, oh, dear God, walked away. It was the funniest thing. Because we don't have that.
No, we just don't. It's very Australia, like he was talking about the eggs. We do eggs on hamburger and our eggs are always runny. You don't do eggs any other way. That's just how
we do scrambled, boiled eggs.
We do scrambled and boiled, but when you go to a restaurant, it's just, you don't get a choice. You just get the egg.
Get the egg, damn it.
Right, just eat it. What's your problem?
Yes. It's fun. But when I came here, as I said, you know, I was on my own. So it all just became too much and I started doing the dumb things. I started drinking and, you know, the whole nine yards. I had a Corvette and I drove it really fast. And my manager over here, who was Australian at the time, she was an Australian, she had a board on her wall and it had all these dates on it. And I walked into her office one day and I was doing something and I said, oh, what's that for? The football? You know, how you have those things for the football here where everybody takes a number. And she said, no, that's when you're going to die. And I went, I'm sorry. And she said, well, you're on a path to kill yourself. So we're just having a bet on when it'll be.
Oh my
and gosh. And that was probably what saved my life.
Wow.
Was the fact that when she said that to me, I realized what I was doing. And I went, oh my God. Wow. And she was serious. She said, you know, you're on a one-way trip, kid.
Wow.
And that how stopped me.
I'm sorry, Vernon. How old were you around that time?
In my 40s.
Oh, wow.
I wasn't a little kid.
Right. But it's just, true. That's the hard thing is that when you get into that Hollywood lifestyle, and it happens to so many, and so many talented people have lost their lives because of drug abuse and alcohol abuse, and it's so sad because it seems so like it's just so attainable and it's right there.
Oh, and we don't, you know, in Australia, drugs and that is not a big deal with us. It's not like part of our culture.
Right.
So we don't look at it from that perspective. But here it's part of the culture in its own way. And I remember going to a dinner party at a very big-time producer's house and a very long table with probably 12, 14 people at this table, and everybody's sitting, chatting, and you know, the first course comes out, which is salad and everything. Everybody's having their salad and that. And I noticed when I walked in that down the table in different places, there were these little silver trays which had white stuff in them and a little silver spoon. And I thought that it was salt. You know how you have salt. Yeah. This is how dumb I was. And so the next course comes out and it's steak with different vegetables. So, and I'm talking to the person next to me and I reach across the table and I take a thing of salt and put it all over my steak. And then I get some more to put on my, and the guy next to me went, like a little bit of food with your cocaine, do you? And I went, what? And I just suddenly went, oh, you have got to be kidding. It was these little things of cocaine.
Wow, that's crazy.
It's just how different societies are. Like, right. You know, there was nothing wrong. It was just that it wasn't something that I was used to coming from a culture which didn't have that.
No, we're a beer culture in Australia.
Oh, yeah.
Beer. Everyone drinks beer. But, it's a very different thing. And also talk about, so was it a big adjustment for you to change from the industry in Australia, because in Australia, our industry, I know, even know for me, only 25 years ago, it was very supportive. We all knew each other. There was only a couple of casting directors. To go from that kind of community to this kind of sea of people. what was that like for you, that adjustment?
It was different. I mean, I remember the first time I walked on the set of Weird Science, and they had this whole house inside the studio, and the house was in four pieces. It was a two-story house because they needed to be able to pull it apart, turn it around and do things. And I stood there looking at it going, we could do four movies in Australia for what that house cost. Wow. And it struck me as to the difference in attitude. And like you said, in Australia, you've got a crew, but it's a limited crew. The people that are on the crew actually work.
Yes.
You know, they're doing their job. There's not, 120 people and 100 of them all sit around looking at the ceiling all day and the other 20 do the work.
So true.
It was getting used to that side of it to me, which was, and it's even on when we were doing the series. I used to be torturing the crew because there were so many people running around not doing anything that I'd always go up and sit with them and go, so, can I get paid to have your job? You know? I just found it interesting in its own way. And I mean, you know, it's the culture. There's nothing wrong with it. Nobody did anything, bad. It's just the culture. And you and I both come from a totally different culture. Like you said, when you did a film in Australia, I mean, on Road Warrior, we had, God, probably 50 crew if we were lucky, probably less. And we worked hard. I always remember they called me Barometer Bum. Because I didn't really have a lot on, and every time my butt turned purple, they would rush us into a warm vehicle. They only had one, by the way, and that we all shared it, me and Mel and everybody else, and get us all warm because they'd say, well, everybody's cold, Vernon's ass is purple. And so but it was the whole different attitude, you know. When I came here and I had my own wagon, I was like, this is just weird. Why do I need all this space?
Yeah.
And you sort of, this kind of silly thing, like you know, it takes a while to get over it. You're sort of like looking around going, this has got to be a bad dream because tomorrow I'll wake up and it'll all be gone.
Well, but no wonder you get sucked in, right? Because you went from this very completely different experience and then you're like, being treated like a god when you come, mm-hmm. You know, it's overwhelming. And if you don't have the right people around you and you're not grounded, it can take you to places that shouldn't, you know?
Yep. Places you don't want to go.
That's what I was going to ask you about as well, because the entertainment culture in America makes the catering to actors, the catering to producers, the catering to those who have a name for themselves can really pop a person up and cause you to forget who you were beforehand, unless you have those people around you. Yes. It was so funny growing up. When I was in college, I would, pretend like I was older so that I could get inside of a club and, have to pay the price and all of that stuff. And, I was broke as a joke, but I had to pay. And then once you start getting a name for yourself and you have the money to actually pay to get inside of the club, everything is catered to you. Like, yep. You don't have to pay for anything. And whatever you want, it's just here for you. And I just find that so interesting that, but that's what Hollywood has become out here. Was it not any fashion or any of that in Australia, like this, that part of the culture, any kind of like, how they cater to you and you have, a PA that comes to your room and asks you if you want breakfast, what do you want for breakfast? What do you want for lunch? What do you want for, can I get this for you? Can I get that to you? In Australia, on set, is there anything like that?
Yeah, it's called move your ass and get your own chair.
Yeah, I don't remember anything like that, Vernon. They had food, like they had a catering, like lunch, but you get it yourself. Like no one's, yep. There's no one.
No one's getting it for you.
No, you are expected to work.
I wonder if that's how it is still in Australia. There's some really, really great big Aussies that have come from, Australia that I'm sure film out there and out here, Nicole Kidman and
Russell Thor.
We come with a whole different attitude, which is the thing that I find the most. It's like, I remember on a couple of film sets, I walked onto a set one day and the producer came over to me and he said, just a little thing we have to tell you before you go on, said the star you do not make eye contact with, you don't talk to him until you're on the set and working. And I just sort of stood there and went, what? I'm like you guys. I'm an actor. I have to associate with the people I'm working with. I need to understand who they are so that when I'm working with them, I can use that to what I'm doing. So I just wandered over and he's sitting in this director type chair and he's having his hair done, his makeup touched up. And I just sort of stood in front of him and I said, excuse me, girls. I said, so I believe we have got a problem. I'm not allowed to look at you, talk to you, or do anything else about you. So I tell you what, get your ass out of that chair, come behind the van here, we'll have it out. The one that walks back makes the rules. So let's go. And all I heard behind was, wait a minute, no, oh, no, come sit here, let's talk. It's that whole
thing.
Nobody ever called him on it. Everybody accepted. And that's the thing. It's acceptance. We accept it.
So how did he respond to that?
I just wandered back and said, okay, so everything's fine. He said, of course it is, dude. Come in and sit. Let's talk about what we're going to do on the set.
Wow.
So, and we had a ball after that. We got on really, really well. And it turned out to be a lot of fun. But
would you like to tell us who that was?
No.
You can tell us in secret.
Yeah, right. They're not super good women. It's a different, I think sometimes it's, you look at English actors, European actors, they're all very similar to Australian. We do our job.
Yeah.
To me, I remember going back to Australia and I was on the morning show. And they were doing an interview with me, which was kind of fun. And I can't think of the host's name. God, he used to use all the English things like Billy Lids and, he would use all those little terminologies. I can't think of his name. Very, very popular. And he had this gorgeous lady who was his sidekick. And I get on the morning show and he's talking to him and he said, So, Vernon, you're back in Australia? And I said, yep. And he said, so I guess the big question is, when are you going to get a job? And I went, I have one. I'm an actor. And he went, yeah, right. So when are you going to get a real job? And it was just this great little thing, right? So I'm sitting there, and I know he's trying to get me wound up. So I'm letting him have fun with me, and the girl that's with him says, so, Vernon, where are you going after you finish here? I said, well, I've got to go over to South Australia, actually, to Adelaide. And she said, oh, I live in Adelaide. I said, oh, that's nice. And she said, yeah, when are you going? And I said, oh, you know, next Thursday or something. And she said, oh, I'll be back there then. She said, so why don't you give me a buzz? And I went, and the guy that's the host, this is on live on air, went, hey, mate, I do it. She's red hot.
Oh, yeah, gosh.
Nobody in this country would do something like this. Is on morning television.
Right.
It was just because it's a different attitude. They don't care that you're an actor and that just you know, you may think you're someone special. You're not. You're just like everyone else.
That's and so true. That's well, we call it tall poppy syndrome in Australia.
Like, tall poppy?
So they cut the tall poppies down. So if there's one person that's elevated and they think they're better than everybody, they call it, they'll cut
slice it. Slice your legs off.
Yeah, I know Nicole Kidman did deal with some of that stuff.
Yep.
Like when she became really popular, they were like, who does she think she is? And, you know.
Really?
Yeah, even though she may not, I don't know her personally. She may be a lovely person, but they don't like people to act like they're.
I think that's great.
Yeah.
I think that's great. I think that we all wipe our butt the same way.
Yeah.
We all use the toilet. I mean, there is no, it shouldn't be that. No. But it is.
No.
Well, I can't actually comment on that because the little guy that wiped my butt, I'm not sure which way he wiped it.
He worked very hard for you. Vernon, we're going to have a little bit of fun. We have we have 10 power questions to ask you.
Okay.
Are you ready for them?
Oh, God, please forgive me. Yes.
Okay, number one is, if you could have any superpower, what would it be and why?
If I could have any superpower, it would be humility. And I would want it because I would want to be able to react to people everywhere on the same level as I'm on.
I love that.
That's a good one.
Yeah, that's a new one too. Deep. Yeah.
Ha 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 ha. My wife's going there going, that's not a superpower, you dummy. Now you know why I don't have a big head, you know, like. This one carves me up every day.
I love that. You go, Vernon. Okay, question two. What are you really good at but hate to do?
Now she's laughing. What am I really good at but hate to do? I guess I'm pretty good at carpentry, but hate to do it.
Okay. I love these.
I hire people to do it.
All right. Question three.
If you could go back in time, what advice would you give your childhood self?
Spend the $7 and sit in the theater. Don't try to be on the screen.
Really?
Really? That's interesting.
So do you regret getting into theater? Okay.
No, I the reason I would say that is because when you're younger, you have all these wonderful dreams of how it's going to be and what you're going to do. And when those dreams don't come true, that's when people tend to drink and do the whole thing because they always feel that they've never been given that chance. And I look at it from my point of view. My mother was a successful songwriter in Australia. And I followed in her footsteps working in bands as a vocalist. And that to me was where I would go. Acting was the last thing on my mind. But because I had all these other things going, when it came about, I took it in a whole different way. I didn't look at acting like the be-all and end-all. is what I'm trying to say. You know, it's because it's sometimes not. As I said to you, I'm just extraordinarily fortunate. I've had this amazing career, and I'm eternally thankful for it. But not everybody gets that.
Yeah. That is true.
It's very true. Absolutely true. Okay. Question four. What do you want your legacy to be when you're gone?
He came, he saw, and thank God he's gone. No, my legacy. I think that when I go, my legacy, I would like to be, he was smart enough to realize that what he did was a gift, and he used it to make other people happy.
I love that,
Vernon.
That's beautiful. You know, my dad actually, his saying was always, I'm here for a good time, not a long time. And I just always thought that was such a cute saying, but it wasn't, because I lost him sooner than I wanted to. But I loved that living life to the fullest, making an impact like that and leaving the world better. That's beautiful. Yeah. Okay, number five is, what are you most grateful for in your life?
She's 5 foot, says she's 5 foot two, but she's actually 5 foot one. She's 5 foot two, and she's Japanese American and Buddhist. That's what I'm most grateful for in my life, because my life changed when I met her.
Oh, how long have you two been married?
29 years.
Wow. Oh, yes. And, I love your relationship. It's so sweet. It's a beautiful, inspiring.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Sometimes I like
to be loved by my husband for that long.
Yeah. It's a true.
No, it's just, you know, I went through a couple of divorces before we met, and it's like that. They say, my grandfather always used to say to me, there's someone for everyone.
Yes.
You've just got to know when you find them. And that's the point, is that sometimes we find them and move on because we aren't smart enough to realize that that's the person that we're going to have the most fun with. I was fortunate that when Grace and I met, I realized instantly, this is it.
Yeah, that's
it. Nothing else is going to happen from here on in, you know. And that's what I'm most grateful for, is her.
That's beautiful. I feel the same way about my husband. I'm sure you do as well. We both married Jersey boys.
Yes.
Which is so funny.
We did. Yeah. They're our own breed, yeah. New Jersey boys.
Like Australians.
Yes.
Okay, we are on six.
Yes.
What is the most courageous thing you have ever done?
What is the most courageous thing I've ever done? Gosh, I've done a lot of silly things, but probably, I don't know if you'd call it the most courageous, but when I was younger, I remember I was walking down the street. It was in Australia. It was in Melbourne, actually, and there was a guy working on his car on a little bit of a slope, and the car slipped off the chock that it was on and fell on him. And I ran over and lifted the car up, and they got him out. I have no idea how, by the way. I couldn't do it again if my life depended on it. But it was one of those instantaneous things that you don't think, your mind does nothing. You just know you have to do something.
Absolutely. You hear that. Yes. You hear people taking cars off children, and like they get this human strength. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it's I don't know that it's courageous. Yes.
It was just also something. Courageous for you to have that creepy man on the back of your boat motorcycle in Road Warrior.
It wasn't creepy. He was the pizza delivery boy, damn it.
Okay, number seven is, what is the best piece of advice you've ever received?
The best piece of advice, well, I told you what it was. My grandfather told me that the people that you ignore on the way up are the ones that kick your butt on the way down. And I think from a perspective of just looking at it, that was possibly one of the best pieces of advice. I always remember my mother's favorite saying with me, which your people are going to love this. My mother's most favorite saying to me was, sweetheart, you were born coming out of a woman. You'll spend the rest of your life trying to get back.
That's brilliant.
Oh my gosh, that is so true.
Yes, it is so true.
That was her favorite saying to me. It was like, thank you.
Oh, I love that. That is brilliant.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, number eight.
Okay, if someone made a movie about your life, I think I know the answer to this now. If someone made a movie about your life, would it be a drama, comedy, romantic comedy, action film, science fiction, or horror, and why?
I think it would be an action comedy.
An action comedy.
I think because to me, life is fun. You know, what we do, what we have, what we give, what we get, you know, it's fun. And the drama is that we have so many bridges to cross in our lives, and it's making the choices and crossing or not crossing. It's those decisions we have to make. That's the drama in our lives. And I think I've been so fortunate, as I said, that I've been able to make the right choices at the right time. I always say that most of my career was the fact that I said no. I said no to Road Warrior. I said no to Commando. I said no to Weird Science. And the directors took no notice of me. It was like, yeah, now when you're doing that, I want you over here. Like, it didn't matter what I said. And I think that whole thing is that sometimes we as an individual will look at where we're going and what we're doing, and we'll make it into something it's not because we don't understand what's going to happen at the other side. And that's the drama of life. That's where we've got to go. And I think that with myself, my whole thing is animals and kids. You know, I don't know whether you guys know, we're involved with wolves and wolf dogs, and we have like 26 of them.
I still have to get out there and see them.
And it's that's like, and kids, you know, because I always look at it and say that the children cannot defend themselves, so that it is up to us to defend them. And adults can defend themselves, so I don't really worry too much about them, but it's kids and animals. And I think that would be my legacy in my film. It would just be how little boy from the farm managed to not want to be, but became a big Hollywood actor. And everybody keeps pushing me to write a book of my life, which I keep sort of ignoring and going, yeah, right, okay, fine. I don't know. See, what we're talking about before, to me, if I write a book about myself, it's like, oh boy, how big-headed can I become?
I have to stop you on that, Mr. Vernon. And that's because we have not only learned so much about you, but it's so, you have such an intriguing life. And I feel like it's life lessons that people could also learn about from your journey.
Yeah.
Like, I think it would really help people, especially young actors that are looking to get into the industry, people that are just, you know, maybe struggling with certain things in their life. Like, your journey, your history, your presence, I think it would just be an extraordinary thing if you wrote a book.
I don't know if you've heard, Matthew McConaughey has written a book called Green Lights, and he kept journals through his whole life, and it's such a fascinating book. And he reads the book on, if you listen to it on Audible, and it's just so fun to hear his experiences and his stories that he's sharing. And I didn't ever think, like, oh my gosh, what an arrogant ass. Like, I loved hearing about, like, getting to know him and hearing about his adventures. And it's all in the way you choose to write it too. You know, you're not an arrogant person, so it will not come across that way. No. You know?
Fine, I'll write a book.
Or write a movie.
Yes.
Actually, it's funny that we're thinking of doing a film on my band days with my band, because my band, the things we got up to in my band are just the most hysterical. And it was because we were just this group of kids. Well, not kids, we're all guys, but this group of guys who had no idea how to control their inner emotions and their external emotions at the same time. We were total rat bags, but we had the greatest time doing it. And as Grace knows, one day we came to a little town in Australia and they were having an auction of a hotel. And we all stood at the back of the auction and we were all bored. So we all started bidding against each other. And eventually we owned a hotel. Now, it couldn't be used for anything else than, as we always said, it had an in-ground swimming pool inside because the whole basement of the hotel was flooded. So it was totally useless, but we just did it because why not? Right. It was just this thing, you know, why not? Just now we own a hotel and we gave it to our manager because none of us knew what to do with it. We said, hey, Bobby, here's a present, it's yours. it's just, you know, I think I was blessed in the way I was able to come up, and I think you would say the same. Being an Australian, we lived in a country where there wasn't as many people, so we had a lot more freedom to be who we are without being sort of trapped into everything. We could get away from it all and live out in the great open spaces. You know, where I lived, there was 11 people went to school. I went to a school with 11 kids.
Yeah, that's crazy. Wow.
And so, you know, it's just, there was that difference that we grew up with. You know, we didn't grow up cloistered in what America represents or Australia represents. We grew up with a whole different set of values. But that was then. This is now. I mean, it's changed in Australia now too. I mean, I go home now and I go, oh boy.
Yeah, it's true. It's a different, it definitely has a different vibe now. All right, yeah. Question 9. We're almost done here. Okay. Can you describe one of your most embarrassing moments?
Good God. One of my most embarrassing moments. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. How I got into this business was I did a stage play in Australia called Hosanna, written by Michelle Tremblay, a French-Canadian writer. It was about a transvestite and her boyfriend. It was a two-hander, two people on stage. My opening entrance was that I come on, little drunk, dressed in leather. I've got a leather jacket on, leather pants, the whole bit. I strip naked in front of the audience and proceed to masturbate. Now, opening night, four rows in, dead center, was my mother, my auntie, my brother, and my two sisters. That's kind of the most embarrassing thing I've ever had to do. So.
I would say that's a big, more than embarrassing.
Did you warn them ahead of time about it?
They knew what was going on. It was actually, what was more embarrassing was that my dialogue in the film was, in the stage play, was punctuated by that four-lettered F word. And My mother cannot stand that word. If you said that in our house, you got hit so hard with whatever she had in her hand. And she just hated that word. And I thought, she's going to stand up in the middle of this performance and yell at me. I know she is. And that, all through this opening performance, that thought was in my mind continuously. Every time my mother moved, because we could see the audience, they were right up on the stage, basically. It was one of those little theatres in the round, you know, like the Playbox Theatre in Melbourne. Small with, you know, they had like 60 people in it, but everybody's really close to you. And every time she flinched or moved, I could see it. And I was like, I would just sort of go, here it comes. She never did, but I'll tell you a little story after we finish this about that. My mother was the greatest in for who I am, my mother was. That's that simple. She had this way that she could cut me to pieces in 10 seconds with four words.
Oh,
okay. What's your 10th one? Give me the 10th one. Next I'm question. Ready.
Would you rather fight 100 duck-sized horses or one horse-sized duck?
He said, what?
Would I ever fight 100 duck-sized horses or one horse-sized duck?
Yes.
I'm sorry, but, you know, I'm a man. I'd have to take on 100.
I love that.
Thank you, Brandon.
Oh my gosh. Brandon, I feel like I could literally, honestly, in all honesty, talk to you for hours.
Yes.
Hours. You'd probably get sick of me, but that's okay. I just love hearing your stories. I love hearing about your life. It is a testimony, like Kat had mentioned. It's so intriguing. I really, really hope that you write a book or a movie.
Okay.
Yeah, I would too. Absolutely.
And you can come on here again and we can just promote it and talk about it.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I just find, you know what, it's funny that my career has spanned quite a few years, and I've been incredibly fortunate. I'm up to 300 and something films, but we're in the middle of a pandemic, and this year I have won 5 Best Actor Awards and 2 Best Supporting Actor Awards in the middle of a pandemic.
That's amazing.
That's congratulations.
Is there anything you want to tell us about that's coming out soon or that we can look for?
There's stuff out. Oh, I've got probably 15 movies coming out on and off. But there's a couple of things I'm very proud of. One of them's called Fear of the Woods. It's a 25-minute. It was done as a The shot in Sweden in the snow, and I froze parts of my body that I didn't think could be frozen, but they were. It's one of those just amazing, amazing things. That the cinematographer was brilliant. The two people that are in the film with me are unbelievable. The scenery is unbelievable, and the director was amazing, and it's won so many awards all over the world. I think it's up to 20-something awards. It's won now, this little 25-minute film. And it was made just to show the investors that he could do it. It turned out so good. It's now the first 25 minutes of the film when they complete the film.
Wow.
It wasn't
amazing.
Supposed to be that, but that's how it turned out. That one, and there's another film I've done called Trouble Is My Business, which is a film noir, black and white film noir, which is wonderful film. I love it to pieces. Landfall, which is a film I shot in Australia for $1.50. Australia's got really big budgets, truly. Yeah, we'd like you in this film, Vern. Can you fly over? Sure. What flight would you like me on? I don't care. You're paying. Yeah, that's the Australian thing.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Oh, thank you so much for giving your time and just sharing your heart with us. And every time I speak to you, I feel like I just love you more. You're just the best.
I agree.
Oh, don't be silly. I love you too. I've always loved you guys. Sorry?
I didn't hear the last part. What were you saying?
I said, no, I've always loved you guys. Because whenever we do a convention, you're the first people I walk up to.
Oh, I know. And you give the best hugs.
Yes.
Best hugs. Even though you played Rancic, this villainous, like, evil character, you're just so lovable. It's hard to believe that you play all these bad guys. A testament to your acting.
I was going
to
say that.
No, you see, that's the other side of me that you don't see.
The darker side.
Have to ask Grace. Yeah.
We'll get Grace on here.
I know. You know, it's so funny because saying that, that sometimes I look at what I do, you know, on screen, and I think somewhere deep inside me, that's my dog decided he's going to go no more, more up the whole way. somewhere deep inside me, there lurks something like that, you know, because they say all acting comes from what we've experienced and what we draw on. And at times I look back on what I've done and I go, God, I'm a warped son of a bitch. Really? I mean, down there deep inside. But now I get all these amazing roles. I just finished one up in Cincinnati where I played this girl's father, and he was a real ass. And at the end, he realizes what he's done and he has to reconcile with her. It's a nice little film called Incidental Christmas, which I love. I just get all these really cool roles to do now, the things that I would never have been given, you know, a few years ago. I now get to play all these fun things, and I still get to be the ass occasionally. I get to, you know, carry a gun and shoot people and do horrible things. As I said, I'm blessed. I'm lucky. You know, my wife, of course, every day says to me, "So, when are you leaving to go to the set? You've been around here way too long."
Get out of here.
Yeah, get out of here. Like,
I think a lot of wives feel like that right now. 2020, the curse of 2020.
I know, 2021's great. It's going to be a good year, and we're all going to be happy. And when it's over, we'll all get to see each other again.
Yes, please, God. Oh,
I agree.
Okay, well, thank you so much for being on our show. We are so honored to have you, and can't wait to give you a big hug in person.
Yes, thank you so much.
Mwah. It's my pleasure. Thank you, sweet ones. And please be well and be safe.
You
thank
too.
You. And say hello to Grace for us.
Yes.
Yeah, she just took the dog out. On the balcony to, I guess, look at the ocean or something. No, never quite sure. She's probably gone down to the garden.
All right. Bye, Vernon.
Bye.